Well, I'm an animator, specifically for visual effects.
Hello and welcome to Obehi Podcast. I'm your host, Obehi A14, and I strongly believe that everyone has a story to share. Now let's get started with this episode.
Might have seen my work in movies like Jurassic World or Pacific Rim or Ant-Man, shows like that. So it's focused. Some people think of animation as, Disney cartoons. Animation is also used in live action movies, specifically when they need a monster or a digital double or some kind of animated performance, some kind of character or creature to come alive on the screen. I've been doing this for 22 years, and 5 years ago I co-founded a visual effects studio. Who we also have a specialty in creature animation. But we also we do the full range of visual effects services. So I think I can go into detail, but I don't want to bore your audience with every
No,
little
not
movie
at
I've
all,
worked
not
on.
at all. But anyway, that's it. So thank you so much, Jeremy. It's really a pleasure to talk with you. I'm connecting with you just now in Italy, and you are in Canada.
Yes. I wish I was in Italy, but go on.
it's perfectly. Every part of the world is beautiful, though. And for the fact that you are in Canada and I'm in Italy, we are sharing. This is actually what is the most beautiful part of it. Otherwise, if you were in Italy and I'm in Italy, where are we going to be talking about Canada? So,
Fair enough. I'm happy to move to Italy and talk about Canada,
all
but
right.
I like it here too. It's a great place. So yeah, I know I'm lucky to be here as well.
Yeah, thank you. I love that. I love that. All right, now I'm going to spend some few seconds trying to know you, your background. So you were born in. Tell me a bit about your childhood. Let us know a little bit about you.
Right. I was born here in Vancouver. Both my parents are immigrants. My mother is from the Caribbean, a country called Trinidad and Tobago. My father's from Ireland. And so they moved out here. I grew up here in Vancouver. And then after I graduated from film school, I ended up working in the UK and then coming back and then worked in Australia for a couple of years and then came back and then ended up working in California, actually on two separate occasions in LA and San Francisco. And then started working here back in Vancouver for a while. And then the company I work for also had an office in India. So I spent a good portion of a year working in India and sort of coming back and forth between Vancouver and India. And beyond that, I love to travel. I mean, both my parents are international. I grew up going to visit family in the Caribbean or in the UK, and then that kind of gave me an appetite for travel. So whenever possible, my wife and I like to go on, like to see the world. And we don't typically do the tourist thing of just going to a place that has a nice beach. We like to go to places that are a little bit more unusual or remote. So,
That's lovely. That's lovely. So now, at what stage in your life did you get involved in animation? I'm trying to understand that part. How did you get into animation?
So when I was I guess the first time I did animation, I was in elementary school, and we had to each every student had to come up with some kind of presentation on whales. So I took some clay models. I made these little clay models of whales, and then I rented a video camera and I tried to make stop motion animation of these whales, telling the audience about what whales do or whatever, whatever the assignment was. So that was when I was about 12 years old. And I don't know, I just always had like an interest in drawing and animated movies and things like that. But by the time I got a little bit older, like teenager, I thought animation was sort of it was for little kids. You know, I didn't take it seriously. I thought art and drawing and stuff was, you know, wasn't for people who wanted a proper career. So I ignored all that. I think it was a big mistake on my part, but I stopped drawing and I stopped taking art seriously because I just thought it was, you know, something for little kids. And then after high school, I wasn't clear on what I wanted to do as a career, but a good friend of mine, he later became a good friend of mine. We were sort of close. We hung out together, but I didn't really know him too well. I was over at his place one day and he showed me this video of this computer animation he was doing. And that surprised me. I looked at this and like, what you mean you can do this as a career? Okay, that sounds interesting. So I at the time I was working in construction, just doing stuff to keep myself busy and to pay my bills and whatnot. And I took some part-time courses, some night classes and stuff to see if this was something that might have been an option for me. And it turns out it wasn't bad. I enjoyed it and I picked it up pretty quickly. So at that point, I ended up taking some more advanced classes. And shortly after graduating film school, I started working. And, then I've just been going nonstop ever since.
That's lovely. So you found what you actually love, what you want to spend your time doing, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there's been highs and lows. There's been moments where... I mean, it's like any profession, right? There are times where you work on a show because it pays the bills, and there's other times you work on a project that you're really excited about. That's a lot of fun to do. But ultimately, I can't complain. This is definitely something I like doing, and people like what I do, so I guess I'm good at it. So it's kind of the best of both.
Mm-hmm. All right, that's good. So before we move into the integrity of what you do in special effect and all that, you did make mention of working with the Jurassic Park or something like that. Do you want to tell us more about that, some of the projects that you have worked in?
Yeah, sure. If anybody wants to look me up, I'm on IMDb. There's been a lot of projects I've worked on, to be honest. And you know, some of the big titles are great for they're names people recognize, but some of the other ones that are less known are also a lot of fun to work on as well. So I'm just sort of bringing up my IMDb right now just to remind myself of some of the things I've worked on. But Charlotte's Web was a big one for me. That was the first major feature film I worked on. I also worked on Wolverine and G.I. Joe. I did a little bit of work on Eclipse, The Thing, Ninja Turtles, Straight Outta Compton, Star Trek, Ant-Man and the Wasp. That was a real big one for me, and Jurassic World. I'm just going through my page here. You kind of forget all these, but
those are big budget project also.
Yeah, I've got over 40 credits, 40 different movies I've worked on, and so I just listed some of the ones that people are more familiar with. Of course, you know, for every one big name project, there's about 10 other ones that are not that well known. The thing is, I'm not the one writing the movie. It's not my I'm not directing it. I'm only responsible for my contribution, and that's the way I've always looked at it. You know, as you know, filmmaking is a process that involves hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And because I don't control the end film, I don't control the end result. All I can be responsible is my contribution, my animation, my visual effects. And if I'm proud of the work I'm doing, I'm less worried about whether or not the film itself is a success, because all I can do is I'm only responsible for my little part of it. Whereas, you know, the production company or the director or producer, you know, they're the ones who are driving the story and everything else. So yeah, you know, you really want, everybody wants to work on Avatar or, you know, Star Wars or something like that. And, I've had opportunities to work on some of those and or been a part of big projects, but, you know, it really is, it really comes down to the work that I'm doing as an individual or as a business owner, and less about the overall credit, you know?
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. That's interesting. All right. Now, how do you create special effects? I mean, now you did this big budget work. You work with this different film, of course, that we love a lot. Mm-hmm. So, but take us to the backstage of how you actually create this special effect. Tell us something about that.
Okay. Well, it's a complicated process. You know, there's many departments that are involved in the making of visual effects, and no one visual effect is done the same way. But I'm sure everybody is familiar with seeing those behind the scenes footage of you know, an actor in front of a green screen, and maybe they've got some funny markers on them, or there's a guy in a green suit or something. That's where things start, right? So as they're making the movie, they'll film a section that's going to have the visual effects in it. They'll put proper things in place to make it easier for people like me to add the visual effects in later. So that means adding a green screen. That could mean adding special markers on the actor, on the actor's face, or a special costume they have to wear. And then that video footage gets sent over to a visual effects company. Right. And then once we have it, what we will do is we will remove the green screen and replace it with whatever background that's supposed to be there. You know, if we're, let's say, Game of Thrones, for example, right? A lot of dragons in that show, a lot of special effects. So let's say you have an actor who's, you know, talking to a dragon or something. That dragon needs to be, we need to make a digital model of it. So that's one person or a team of people who are making basically the same as, you know, a toy model or something, but it's all done in the computer and it's all made to look realistic. Okay, so we have that digital model, but it's just not moving, right? That gets handed over to the animator who animates the dragon moving, and also matches that dragon's movement to whatever the actor's doing as well. So it looks like, you know, that person, they're talking to this dragon who's over here, and you can see the dragon reacting to the actor and the actor reacting to the dragon. So it feels like it's in the scene. But it doesn't stop there. The next step would be to make sure that the dragon looks like it's actually in the scene. Looks like the light hitting the dragon matches the light hitting the actor. You know, so there's that stage. And then, and there's several other special effects things that go on, you know, adding dynamic simulation. So if the dragon is blowing fire, you know, you need a special artist to do that, and so on and so on. So I could go into further detail, but you see where it's going here, right? There's several different little details that have to be added. And that's why it looks so realistic. You know, when a visual effect has all those subtle details that we're used to seeing in real life. And we've all, the filmmakers and the visual effects artists have added those subtle details to the special effects. It looks that much more believable.
That effect, that surreal, as it were, is what's actually making me curious, no? That how are you able to create the concept and make it so real at the end of the day, so that people go to the movie. Okay, let's say that people know that the movie is not actually real, in that the monsters are not actually that, as it were, no? Mm-hmm. But they still go there because the feeling is so strong, no? And the feeling is strong because there is a lot of effort that is around it. That is why people go there. So how do you create the concept and then make the movie so real so that the people actually get used, like it? I'm talking of the, from the point of view of the sound effect now, a visual effect.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great point. Like, how do you make something look real? And especially when it's all digital. I mean, it doesn't exist. In the past, they would make actual models that maybe they're, you know, miniature models or something. And those were, even though they were fake, they were still a real thing, right? Whereas now everything exists in the computer. It doesn't exist in real life. But even though it's all digital and we're using computers, what we have to do at every stage, even if it's something that doesn't exist, like a dragon, myself and every other artist working on it is going to look at real life examples. So if we're making a dragon, you know, we're going to start studying maybe dinosaurs or lizards or bats and even birds and things like that that can fly. Maybe lions and tigers too, because there's similar things that they do. So we're looking for any kind of real life examples that we can bring into something that's not real. You see what I'm saying? So it's sort of bridging that gap between reality and fantasy, because you and I have seen all these things in real life. We haven't seen dragons in real life, but we've seen birds and we've seen dinosaurs at the museum.
You see the lizard and the rest, yeah.
Exactly, right? So there's certain things that we know is real. And if I can put those little elements into something that's not real, that unreal thing is going to start looking more like the real thing, right? So you want to at least bring the audience into the fantasy world with something that's not fantasy.
Is it difficult to create, to work on? Okay, looking at your work, for example, is it difficult or is it simple? I want you to explain that part also.
No, I mean, to do anything well is not easy, but there are ways to simplify things to you know, take out the complexity. Just the way I explain things, I broke it down into a very simple explanation, but it's not that simple. I mean, there's several steps and there's several if I were to write out the whole visual effects workflow, it would be several pages long. But I can simplify it into little steps or broad stages and then break it down from there. So it's the same thing with creating the visual effects is, we will try and, we'll start with a very simple stylized drawing of a dragon and then realize, okay, well, maybe the wings are too big or they're too small or whatever. And then we will go from there and then slowly build something up. So all these little steps have now grown into something much bigger.
All right. Now, say maybe somebody is looking for you to describe what a visual effect really is, no? A kind of a definition. How would you describe it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a visual effect when we're talking about movies is any effect that is happening on film that couldn't be filmed in real life. So if it could be an explosion, it could be a dinosaur, it could be just making the background look different. So you see the visual effects in actually just about everything nowadays. It's cheaper to film a movie in Vancouver, if the crew is all here in Vancouver, and make that movie look like it's New York than it is to fly a whole bunch of people over to New York, make sure the setting's correct, make sure, you know, the streets are shut down or whatever extra details you have to do to go there in real life, than it is to just put some green screens behind the people and then put New York in the background. So, like I said, any effect, it doesn't matter if it's something fantastic or magical, or if it's something just as simple as replacing the building in the background. That can be a visual effect. But I guess in simple terms, it's anything that the film crew couldn't film in reality.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that, Jeremy. Now, listen. How do you describe the power of storytelling? In that, now, we look at storytelling, it's something that we go back several thousands of years, and we see that we'll be telling story. But what it did is one of the things that really hasn't changed that much. Okay, now we have different ways of telling story, but the power is still there. Looking at the cavemen, people, looking at our ancient ancestors who could sit around the fire and they tell story. That idea, the simple concept, very rudimental, is a highly powerful tea date. So what is actually behind this storytelling?
Yeah, I mean, that's an age-old question. it goes back to I think it's just a storytelling is, for human beings, it's the best way to communicate information. You know, our ancestors would sit around the campfire telling stories to their children because, you know, you could say to a baby or a child, you know, don't run out at the middle of the night because, you know, you might get lost or something. But it's more powerful to tell the babies, you know, don't run away because the witch will come and eat you or something, right? Even though there's tigers and whatever else out there, or it's more powerful to tell for the king to tell his subjects the reason why they should save up for winter, save their crops or something, because they have a story of some misfortune that happened to somebody who didn't, as opposed to just saying do this because I said so, right? So like I said, I think it's just a very powerful way to get people to connect to information emotionally, as opposed to just telling people facts. And one of the things that I really enjoy as being an animator or a visual effects artist is when, because a lot of movies I worked on are just mindless entertainment. You know, it's just people will look at it and, oh, wow, that thing's exploding and that those monsters are fighting each other and that looks really cool. But there's no real message to it. There's no real, it defeats the purpose of storytelling. That's a wasted opportunity. You have these millions of people are captivated by this movie and they're not learning anything from it. They're not thinking deeply. The projects I've enjoyed working on the most are the ones that had some kind of message that made people think a little bit. And for me, one of the funnest things for me is when a movie is exciting to watch, it has great visual effects, but it also has something of more substance to it. So when the visual effects help tell that story, that's when it gets really, the work gets really satisfying.
Mm-hmm. So most of your works, they tend to be kind of science fiction movie in the like of Transformer, mm-hmm. Or things like that. Of course, people come to those movies also because of the sound, no? Those say, but I'm going to grab it, bro. So apart from those sound effects, they're actually intriguing because, of course, they are designed by people like you who have taken the time to study them, to actually attack the emotion of the people so that they remain there with their eyes like this until the end of the movie, you know? How could the story be laced in so that it's not just for people to come and spend their time and then go away? We know that it's all fake, you know?
Yeah.
But so that the moral lesson is strong, it is strong enough that it can remain with the people, in sense of a deep message. Help me with that.
Yeah, I mean, well, it doesn't even need to be that deep, but as long as there is some substance in there, I think for the most part, I mean, they're usually like, even the Fast and Furious movies, they you know, those are all about, you know, driving cars and smashing things up and, you know, guys acting tough, but there is still an underlying message of family is important. They're always stressing that. Avatar is another one too. I mean, they live in this, they go visit this completely fake world on another planet, but it looks so beautiful and so magical that it makes people think about what we have here on Earth. It makes people think about conservation. You know, you can see the mining companies are trying to get all the unobtainium, and they're tearing down the forest on Pandora, and, you know, it's a real struggle for the people there. And we're kind of doing the same thing here on Earth. So I felt like that was a pretty effective way to get that environmentalist message across in a movie that, you know, had broad appeal. It wasn't overly preachy or anything. But they layered in that message of environmentalism into a movie that could have just been, you know, an action blockbuster. But they also got a positive message in there as well.
All right. Now, looking at the creation of this artwork, both visual and sound effect, of course, both of them you are working together, no? Because I think if you remove the visual effect from the sound effect, sometimes there's going to be something missing, obviously evident, no?
Yeah. Yeah, right. Unfortunately, I'm not really involved in the sound effects. Sometimes we will be asked to hit certain sound cues if it's something special about a specific sound effect, but typically, you know, all this, like the Transformers, you know, the sound design on the Transformers movies is amazing. You know, when they transform, you hear all the bits and pieces of the mechanics of them coming apart. But that was all done afterwards. So the animation was done first, and then that was handed over to the sound effects department, and they would say, okay, well, yeah, he's moving like this, so I got to make a sound like that, right? As opposed to the sound effects coming to us and saying, okay, we want to hear these sounds, so you make your animation like that. That would be too complicated and too difficult. So in a lot of cases, the sound effects are added afterwards.
In the overall project, the script is written on so that we know where we are going. But in the creation of the content itself, first the visual is created and then the sound is created to accompany the visual.
Yeah.
Something like, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's typically how it goes. Especially for visual effects, the movie has already been, 90% of it, the editing has already been done. All the live action has been filmed. You know, we'd be involved in the beginning to say, okay, well, we want to make this dragon 20 feet long. Here's a concept of it. Here's what to expect. You should film these shots with the assumption that the dragon's head is going to be this long on screen. So make sure there's enough space on screen for us to put the dragon over here and your actor over there. Those kind of things. But for the most part, it's all been filmed, it's all been edited and cut together, and then it's given to the visual effects team to add those special effects, those visual effects in after the fact. And then there may be some back and forth between us and the production company for them to say, you know what, we filmed this shot too long, we're going to cut it short, or we didn't give you enough time to make your visual effects work, so we'll make this shot a little bit longer. But in reality, it's more like they film it, add visual effects, add sound effects, and then put it all together and put it on the screen.
From the ancient, like we were saying before, our ancestors have been very attractive to storytelling. Mm-hmm. Up to date, we and our children and children are going to love story because it's just the way we operate as a species. And one of these reasons is because of the emotion that is transmitted in it.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, when you create visual effect in the like of Jurassic Park, Transformer, and all those big busted films, you are creating emotion for the people. Mm-hmm. What do you feel as your emotion when you create this kind of effect?
Well, yeah, that's something I always talk to my team about, making sure they're thinking about as well. When we're animating, even if it's a dinosaur, I mean, you think of a dinosaur, they you don't really see lizards showing much emotion, or even birds. Birds eventually evolved from dinosaurs, but the medium of film and the story is for people. So what we have to make sure, if we're adding a visual effect, even if it's it doesn't matter what kind of visual effect we're adding, it's what the emotional response of the audience is going to be. That's something we have to always be thinking about. How is the audience going to react to this on an emotional level? Now, most of the time it's fear or excitement, but other times you want to feel empathy with the creature or character on the screen. So in the case of a dinosaur, it doesn't have the same facial expressions as a person. So what can we do with its body language to get the audience to think or feel what that dinosaur is feeling? On the other side of it, maybe it's just biting a camera. We want to make sure that the audience gets scared, right? So we have to make sure that its motions and its behavior look scary. So it's a two-way thing. Like we're thinking about what the audience is going to feel, and also what our visual effects are going to represent as well, in terms of, is the audience going to empathize with what they're seeing, or are they going to be reacting to what they're seeing? Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
How do you know when a sound effect, okay, not a sound effect because you don't design sound effect, you said, no? When do you know that a visual effect, does it work?
When it gets the reaction that the director wants. We're ultimately beholden to whatever the director or the filmmakers want to see on the screen. But yeah, there's different ways to measure the quality of a visual effect, how real it is, how many details we added, those things. But ultimately, it really comes down to what the audience is going to feel. Are they going to feel the same thing that we intended them to feel? So are they going to be, I want that effect to look scary and the audience isn't scared, that's a failure. If I want the audience to feel love for the creature or excitement or whatever emotion I want them to feel, if they feel that, then it's a win.
And how do you feel yourself, Jeremy, when you know that what you are creating is going to condition people? You're basically going to tell them, be happy, and they are happy, be sad, they are sad, just by consuming your information. You look like a superman now. How do you feel at that point?
like I said, it's a team sport. There's a lot of people involved in the whole thing, and it comes down to the filmmaker and the movie itself. It's also the sound design team as well. That sound can, you can have a very simple scene or a simple effect, and a powerful sound will make that audience feel some emotion as well. So, I mean, how do I feel throughout the whole process? If everything's going right, it's a very exciting thing. It's very fun to be a part of. If every person on the team is working together to make something that people will enjoy, then yeah, it's a good feeling.
That's a good feeling. I can imagine that. That's a good feeling.
Yeah.
All right. I had a kind of curiosity when you were doing the explanation before, because yes, story is the same. It's going to remain the same for all the foreseeable future. But the way that we create the story is changing, and it has been changing, and it continues to change. Today, with the keyboard, we can do almost miracle. Mm-hmm. This is the best that the technology can give us today. This is 2022. But as we move forward, as we go into the future, more technology are going to come. We're not already talking of AI, be used to create art and the rest of it. Mm-hmm. How do you see the work of visual artists or visual work, or visual effects, sorry, or visual storytelling in the future? Where do you see it?
I wish I could predict the future, because there's a lot of exciting stuff that is happening right now. I mean, we've been talking about VR for decades now, but it hasn't fully taken off yet. AR is something that augmented reality is something that's happening more and more. The games. Video game sector, I mean, that is, there's some very impressive stuff happening when it comes to video games. And video games have sort of, they seem to have bridged the gap between, you know, just a game and a story. There's more storytelling being brought into gameplay. And also the games are becoming more and more immersive, and the graphics are becoming more and more realistic. So I think that's a pretty exciting part of storytelling. Now, I don't play a lot of video games. I'm not very in touch with the video games world. I really enjoy movies, and that's why I've stuck with that. But I'm more and more, I'm getting excited about what I'm seeing in the game space, because going back to what you were talking about earlier with the fact that, you know, how do you get people to connect to something emotionally? Well, if you are engaged in the story, then you're going to be more emotionally connected to it. So what's more engaging than actually playing and being a part of the story? So I think that's going to be a very powerful tool for storytelling, and I think games makers are getting more involved in that. Artificial intelligence is also a pretty exciting tool. Actually, a friend of mine is going to be in Italy next week at there's a conference called The View, and he'll be there talking about AI. He's been very involved with a tool called Midjourney, which it's amazing what he's been able to do with that. I mean, basically, he's a great artist to begin with, but Midjourney and a lot of these other tools are allowing people to create an image by simply describing it with text. It's amazing.
It's powerful.
It's very powerful. So what does that mean for the future? I mean, eventually, I think this is a long way to go, but eventually, could you put your script into a program and then that program turns that into a movie? It's a possibility. I mean, it sounds like science fiction, but we're already, I mean, people are painting pictures just with typing, and really stunning pictures to begin with. So I read a graphic novel that was all illustrated with AI. The guy couldn't draw, but he could write, and he created this book. It was, every page of it was illustrated, and every illustration in it was great. So is that going to put me out of business? I don't think so, but we'll have to find a way to adapt and adopt these tools moving forward. So I think technology is going to allow filmmakers and artists and storytellers to be able to tell even more interesting and exciting stories. I mean, I could go through the whole history of animation and how it started with pencils and paper. And now we're using all these amazing digital tools to create animation that people couldn't even dream about 50 years ago. So what's going to happen in the next 50 years? I mean, if everything goes right, it's going to get even better. And absolutely, it's also going to make it easier for more people to tell their stories and less expensive to tell stories. So I think that's really exciting when, you know, Hollywood kind of dominated everything for such a long time. But we've heard everything Hollywood has to say. I want to hear what's going on in every corner of the world. You know, I want to hear a story from Argentina or Malawi or Vietnam, not just Hollywood. And I think the world wants to hear that too. But that's just my opinion. So
thank you for that. I appreciate that. I love that too. That is one of the things that we also try to promote here, which is that everyone has a story to share. It is not just one-sided story. The idea that we need to wait for them to tell my story and tell your story and tell her story and tell his story is not working. It's not going to work because when we do that, we are shortchanging humanity. Mm-hmm. Because humanity is deep, have a lot to share with all of us. So we simply cannot just leave this reality through one side. It is going to be all side. It is going to be 360 degree.
Absolutely. And, you know, and then the other thing that we're kind of missing out on is the fact that, like, we all have a lot of the same stories. Every culture, I mean, well, we're all human beings. So we're all going through the same struggles, same challenges, just in different ways, in different settings. So there's no reason for us to ignore a story from Trinidad just because we may not be from Trinidad or from Italy or from wherever. But, you know, there are certain nuances and there are those differences, but there's also the similarities as well. So you can tell a story from one part of the world and still relate to it. But because, you know, it's easier for people to get something made in Hollywood, they're going to follow the Hollywood cliches as opposed to bringing their own culture into it.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking of culture, talking of the AI and the future world that is going to come, I'm trying to see here that it appears that there is a kind of commonality among all human, all of us, all our culture. Now, as a visual artist, as somebody who creates a visual element to tell a story, mm-hmm. What do you say about maybe, for example, some of this fundamental behavior that we all have? Like, you don't need to tell me you are crying. I know that you are crying. Mm-hmm. And if I pay attention to what you are doing, sometimes your crying can also actually affect me. I might cry too.
Yeah.
When you laugh, your laughter can affect me. It doesn't matter whether you are laughing in Chinese or laughing in Nigerian language, mm-hmm. or laughing in Italian language or laughing in English. I wanted to spend some time about that. This common denominator among all of us that, irrespective of the languages, we all understand it. We all share it. We all feel it. How do you put this into your visual storytelling?
Yeah. Well, that's why I think animation is such a powerful tool, because it transcends any language. Also, with visual effects or animation, we have to make sure that our work doesn't need to be explained. You know, if you, like I said, if we keep using the dragon example, right? Like, if that dragon is supposed to be doing one thing, but it looks like it's doing something else, it's where we failed at our job. So we don't really work with sound because we're making sure that we don't have to rely on the next department to make sure that our work looks correct. And I think that's really like, I kind of answered this before, but it's like, we want to make sure that the audience feels what we're doing, what feels an emotional connection with our visual effects. So, exactly what you said. It doesn't matter what language a person speaks. If they connect with what we've made, then we've done our job right. If they don't, then we haven't.
I'm like wondering now, in your work, because you work with people, you also spend some time alone working on. Mm-hmm. What do you like about your work? I mean, as a visual storyteller, though, as an animator, what do you like about it? Because I know that you spend a lot of time doing work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something must be there that motivates you.
Yeah, there is. You know, I honestly thought about this question, but I haven't really, nobody's really asked me this. So it's I'm glad you put me on the spot here. There are multiple different things I like about what I do. My main focus was animation, so the movement of the characters or the creatures on the screen. And what I liked about that is I've always liked wildlife, I've always liked nature. So part of creating an animated performance is actually studying the animals or the creatures or whatever it is creating, right? So a couple of years back, we worked on a project for a museum that had a dinosaur in it. And it was just before we even started animating the creature, I got to talk to paleontologists and scientists and find out exactly what their theories were on how this T-Rex dinosaur moved, how it behaved, even how they thought, what their sort of instincts were. If my fate were a bit different, maybe I would be a biologist or a paleontologist or something like that. I think there's a lot I enjoy about that part of the process. The other thing I really enjoy is when the details are right. I'll spend hours and hours making sure that just, you know, a hand gesture looks believable or a facial expression conveys the right emotion. There's something very satisfying about making sure that something is as close to perfect as you can get it. So there's the craftsmanship element, you know, just making sure that you've done your job well. I guess the other thing I really enjoy is being a part of the whole filmmaking process. So, you know, there's the very focused part of the work of making sure each shot, each frame of the movie looks good. But then there's the other side of things where we're looking at the whole film and making sure that each shot in the film helps tell that story, helps the audience connect to the emotion, helps connect to the overall plot line. And, in recent years, I've been more involved in that part of things, where I, you know, get to go out on set and actually make sure that the filming is done in a way that makes it easier for us to add the visual effects. Being a part of the pre-production part of things where we're talking to the director and really trying to understand what it is that they want their movie to communicate, what their story is and what story points are really important to their film. So, yeah, I wish I could say it was just one simple thing and I had a shorter answer for you, but there's several elements to the whole thing that keep things exciting and keep things.
Yeah, I think James Allen was saying that artists are the creator of the other world, in that invisible world that we crave. Somebody have created, and these are the artists. Those are the people who imagine what it could be, and they even make it visible by creating things that it's not really there, or maybe it's there, but not in a dimension that we can understand it. Somebody have to put it out there for us to see.
Yeah.
In a sort of sense, there is a satisfaction for doing that, because now you are giving people something to hope for. So giving people a sense of being here, you know. So I think there is a lot of, it is important to find the meaning in what we do. It is very, very important. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Now, if there was a message that runs through your work, because now you have done major work, no, that say maybe if you are not here 150 years from now, those work are still going to be there. They are going to make impression in the life of the people. Mm-hmm. That is an achievement of a staggering proportion. But say maybe, for example, that is a message you want to leave with the people through the signature of your work, the work that you do, which is a message, for example, that you are leaving behind for humanity. What would that message be?
Wow. That's a very tough question to answer. I maybe it's not as evident in my work as it is in some of the things I've done as an employer or as a supervisor at other companies. One of the things I'm very proud of, and actually even in my spare time, I tend to try and look for opportunities to mentor other artists. I wish I could write my own stories and write stories that had meaning, but you know, really my strength is being able to create the visual effects part of it. So that's just adding something special to something that's already special. So I guess, you know, my work, I'm proud of it. I think people like it, but one of the other things I try and do to get meaning out of my work and to try and build some kind of legacy is to mentor and help other artists, other visual effects artists, other animators with their own careers. So I've been a part of a few different organizations, and I try and volunteer as much time as I don't have much free time, but whenever I have that extra bit of time, I'm more than happy to give up and coming artists a bit of advice that they can learn from and go on to build great careers of their own. And, you know, then they can go on to do something special with that as well. It's, you know, a steady employment or a bigger career, or maybe they go on to make a big movie that has a big impact on other people. So it's hard to say, you know, really what. I can't predict the future, and I don't know what my purpose on Earth will really result in. But I figure if I can help other people, then maybe they can go on to do something that has a really big meaning.
If we were to remember the quote of Muhammad Ali, he did say that the service we render to others is the rent we pay for living on Earth. So if we could do something good for other people, then that is probably the best that we can do.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, no, that's a great quote. I'm going to write that one down and remember it.
Thank you for your sharing. I appreciate it. Now, how can people connect with you? Those who want to learn more about your work, those who want to maybe reach out to you, use this few seconds to promote what you are doing. Why not? It's legitimate to do that.
For sure. Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn all the time. So LinkedIn is probably the best way to connect with me. My family just got home. Yeah, so this is perfect timing. LinkedIn, Jeremy Stewart at LinkedIn is the best way to connect with me. I'm happy to connect with other people. We can chat and connect and take things further from there.
Thank you so much for that. Now, what would be your final thought to conclude the conversation?
I'd just like to thank you. I missed our first scheduled appointment, and I appreciate your patience and your accommodating me rescheduling to today. And I've really enjoyed this talk. I think you've given me a lot to think about, and hopefully some of the things I've said today resonate with the audience, and maybe people learn from me. And I'm, like I said, I'm happy to continue this conversation with you or with anybody else online in the future.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. It has been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you.
Pleasure talking to you too, and thank you so much.
If you enjoy this podcast, make sure you subscribe so you never miss any of our future episodes. Rate and review Obehe Podcast and share with your friends who might need it. I remain Obehe Ewafo. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you in the next episode.